Welcome back to The Takeaway. It's Todd Zwillick with you today. It's been 50 years since we got that first view of our planet from the moon's orbit. Taken on this day in 1966, a crude black and white photo from NASA shows a crescent Earth in the background with the moon in the foreground. The image was really the first to give a true perspective on just how small our home planet really is in space. Humans haven't been to the moon in decades, but earlier this month, the Federal Aviation Administration approved Moon Express, that's a private company, to be the first company to send robotic landers to the lunar surface. Moon Express's stated mission is to develop and mine the resources of the moon. On its own website, its co-founders envision a future where Moon Express brings resources back to Earth, even uses the moon as a base for further space travel. People have been talking about lunar mining and even lunar colonization for a long time, and Moon Express might be taking the first very steps to making science fiction a reality. Here to talk about all this is Jason Kendall. He's adjunct professor of astronomy at William Patterson University. Jason, welcome back to The Takeaway.
Thank you for bringing me here.
And we're going to talk about the moon as a mining colony in a second, but I want to get something else on the table very quickly. Everybody is excited that this is the 50th anniversary of the picture of the Earth from the moon. Right. But we've surpassed that. I mean, we have the tiny blue dot photos from the edge of the solar system so much more expansive. You know, it even makes that picture seem quaint.
That first picture from Lunar Orbiter 1 was just an astonishing photo because it was the first image that came back from space looking at the Earth from above the moon. So you have the moon in the picture below the spacecraft, and it's this old grainy photograph. It was quite astonishing. And so even the achievements of the Christmas Eve event on the Apollo missions, as well as the pale blue dot view back from Voyager, as well as the recent things from Cassini, they're standing on the shoulders of the giant of these little bitty spacecraft that first went out into the solar system.
And the first one that gave humans that sense of aloneness and tininess in the universe.
Pale blue dot, we only see one pixel in the camera. It's just one tiny, tiny, tiny pixel. So we really see that the Earth is just a very tiny stage upon which all of our things are happening. We learn through the space program that we're our own spaceship, that the Earth is a spaceship through space.
Well, let's talk about the moon and using it for our own purposes.
Absolutely.
That's where science usually goes. What is there that we could possibly want?
Well, there's a lot of things, potentially. The first thing that everybody talks about is the presence of a gas called helium-3 or light helium. It's the same stuff that's in party balloons. But helium-3 is missing one neutron. Normal helium, the party balloon helium, has two neutrons and two protons in the nucleus of the atom. But helium-3 is only one neutron. And that comes from the solar wind. The sun spews out this helium-3. And it embeds itself in the lunar surface. And the reason for that is potentially to use it as fusion reactions on Earth once we figure out how to do that.
And the Earth is running short on helium supplies as it is, and not for party balloons, but for important industrial uses.
Yeah.
There are also rare earth metals that we need for iPads, cell phones, lots of screen technology.
Absolutely. There's a lot of people that think that there might be huge amounts of titanium and iridium or other rare earth elements on the surface of the moon as a result of asteroid impacts. So metallic asteroids have it in abundance, and it might be difficult to actually go to an asteroid and mine those things. But perhaps simply just go to the moon, go into a crater, find the stuff, and dig it up. So it's easier for small private companies to actually think, let's send a little rover to the moon, dig some stuff up, and launch it back. The Chinese are planning a 2017 lunar mission to bring material back. As have been done before, of course, with the Apollo missions, which brought huge amounts back. And the reason we even think helium-3 exists is because of the rock samples that were brought back by the Apollo missions.
There's a reality here, which is that traveling a 500,000-mile round trip to the moon and bringing back tons of dirt is expensive. Where is the point where this becomes worth it to somebody to actually do?
Well, that's a good question because it's a multi-billion-dollar investment just to do this. And with Google Earth prizes and Google Lunar prizes going actually at that and trying to get it to work, the goal is to actually see if that can become economically viable. I think what we can do is we can actually take it a bit further and think about in terms of what we really want in terms of a society, in terms of who we are. If we really, really want to get away from fossil fuels to help mitigate, you know, various effects of global warming and so forth, the best thing to do is try to invest in things like fusion, which can actually give clean energy and maybe even rig up a space elevator from the moon and literally have the material ride it.
So this is all to say that there isn't a present economic case for this, but there's very possibly a future case for it.
Right. What you can think of this is prospecting. So imagine going out to the American West in the 1800s and say, okay, let's go find some gold. And so let's go find the platinum. Let's go find the helium-3. It costs a lot. It's an enormous undertaking. It will be difficult. It will be dangerous. But eventually, I think as a society, that's our future. I think that's where we're going. If we wish to actually go to Mars, it'd be easier to build a rocket on the surface of the moon.
Because it's so small.
It's because it's so small.
And not a lot of gravity. Absolutely. You know, Jason Kendall, I've talked to a couple of people about this, and the same question always comes up. The moon has an important function here on Earth, which is its gravitational pull and the tides. Can we alter the mass of the moon in an appreciable way and alter our tides?
No. Simply put, no. The moon is really big. I mean, we think the moon's small, looks small in sky. No, it's not that small. It's an enormous body.
So surfers of the future need not worry. All of this stuff is going to be done by robots and cables. Are we ever going to get people back on the moon?
I think we will. I imagine that the Chinese, I think they're actually trying to replicate the Apollo program. They've done significant amounts of work on that. So I believe that we're going to be going back to the moon. I think it's something – because it's easier to get to the moon than to Mars. If we really wanted to talk about getting to places that are tough, Mars is really hard. But the moon would be a more important place for us to go. It's like visiting Antarctica. It's like working in that location, those remote locations, like at the bottom of the Marianas Trench. They're difficult places to get to. They're incredibly difficult, economically hard. But the rewards are amazing when we get there. When we think about it, because I remember the lunar launches. I was a little kid and I watched Apollo 16 and Apollo 17 on the television when I was very young. And I just remember the sounds of that old television, the old black and white, and the beeping of the microphones as they talk back and forth, and the excitement of Harrison Schmitt as he fell down a few times as he was picking up rocks. It was just an amazing thing. When we actually look at what the moon feels like to us as we look at it in the night sky, that's a place to us. It's a place we've been to. It's a place we can return to. It's a new manifest destiny, if you wish to use that. And I think that that will be someplace we will eventually go.
The FAA says, have at it, prospectors, mine the moon. Go there, find its resources. That's a first step. There's only a future case for this type of mining, but Jason Kendall is ready for it. He's adjunct professor of astronomy at William Patterson University. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.